Welcome to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast, the show where brilliant professionals share how to sharpen the universal skills required to flourish at work. Enjoy more career fun, wins, meaning, and money with your host, Pete Mikaitis.
Hello, and thanks for joining us here for episode 430 with Jeff Gargis. I've got many emails from folks who are teachers and want some tips. Well, that's exactly what Jeff does. He equips teachers to be all the more excellent at teaching and shares how that applies to all of us who are not teachers. So you'll learn one, three links between classroom management and organizational management. Two, how to return to caring about people when you don't feel like it. And three, how to reach the unreachable. So if you want to check out the show notes or the transcript or the links to items that we've referenced here, it's over at awesomeatyourjob.com/ep430. And while at awesomeatyourjob.com, I hope you'll check out some nifty stuff, such as every episode tagged by the topic and the competencies covered, which is in the drop-down of the navigation menu where it says podcast over at awesomeatyourjob.com. Now here's Jeff's story. Jeff Gargis is the COO and co-founder of the Teach Better team, the creators of teachbetter.com, the grid method, and Teach Further. He works with educators to increase student engagement and improve student success. Prior to co-founding Teach Better, Jeff was the owner of ENI Multimedia, an online marketing firm where he worked with entrepreneurs and small businesses, assisting them with web design, social media, content marketing, and brand awareness. Prior to all that, Jeff was an adjunct professor at Kent State University and spent over 10 years in the music industry. He's spoken at conferences around the country and has successfully promoted more than 500 events and launched 7 businesses in a variety of industries. So huge thanks to Jeff for sharing his time and expertise with us, and huge thanks to our sponsors. We got Care Of, who's got some delicious, wholesome, customized protein at a crazy low price for listeners here, as well as Blinkist, which helps you learn from nonfiction books in a flash. But first, here's Jeff. Jeff, thanks so much for joining us here on the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast.
Hey, man. Thanks, Pete, for having me. It's really an honor to be on here, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm excited to dig in. And first, I want to hear, you shared when signing up for this scheduler that you can likely cry at romantic comedies more so than your wife. What's the story behind this?
I'm a big sucker for romantic comedies. I've always been a hopeless romantic, as I describe it, just the way I am. I don't know if it's... I'm pretty sure I blame my mom, but I'm just a hopeless romantic, and my wife's a tomboy. It's just like, I'm more likely to tear up a little bit at a moment, even if it's in like a silly like Adam Sandler romantic comedy, and it shouldn't be tear-worthy. I'll get there before her, for sure.
Yeah.
Like, it's not uncommon.
Oh, that's funny. That's funny. I just recently discovered the TV series This Is Us.
I won't even get into it because I know what's going to happen. Like, my brother and my sister-in-law watch it, my mom watch it, and all these people. And I'm like, no, that's not... I don't be able to handle that. Like, no way.
Well, it's a good thing I waited until I became a parent to watch this show. Otherwise, I'd be like, yes, it's boring. But I'm like, oh, my God.
It's crazy after you become a parent what other things affect you. And you're like, wow. Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, so now you're also a listener and fan of the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast. Like, legitimately.
I am. Big fan, like legitimate fan, yes.
As opposed to the things that publicists say to try to get you to buy.
No, absolute legitimate fan. I no joke, and not because I was coming, like we were doing this, but I was at the gym a couple hours ago getting my workout in, and I was listening to it with your episode with Michael Hyatt, which was awesome. He's a big fan of his as well. So yeah, love it, man. Love what you're doing.
Totally. Well, I love what you're doing. You are helping the world teach better. So can you orient us a little bit? So you got a few things going on. What's up with Teach Better and the Grid Method and Teach Further?
So yeah, the Teach Better team is what we are. Everything's over at teachbetter.com. And we do a lot of stuff, but like our general mission is we work with teachers and school districts to implement best practices, implement district-wide initiatives, and other bits and pieces of professional development and training for the teachers. Essentially, all we try to do is just help teachers be better at what they do. Like, teachers are already doing amazing things in their classrooms. We're not trying to go in and change what they're doing. We're just trying to support them in every way and any way we possibly can to help them do it. It all got started with something we call the Grid Method, which is a mastery learning framework that my co-founder, Chad Ostrowski, created in his classroom, basically out of necessity. And he was struggling to reach his very high needs population of students, and got to the point where he considered quitting. And decided that he either needed to go get a job somewhere else or he needed to figure out how to teach better. And he luckily stayed in and figured that out. He's a scientist by trade, so he kind of dissected everything and found best practices that seemed to be the research showed would answer his struggles, but couldn't find a way to put them all together. So we created the system, and that's sort of what launched us. Is he called me asking about doing an ebook, because I was in the online marketing world at the time, and teachers in his district were asking questions, because basically the students were telling them they didn't know how to teach anymore, which was fun for him in a lot of ways, but a little target on his back. But also a lot of teachers that were like, hey, I want to reach these kids too. And then I told him, and our team will tell you, my famous words were, dude, we're not just doing an ebook. I said, we have to do something different. You've got something here. And apparently I was right, because now we're trying with schools all over the country, and it's growing, and we do a lot more than just the grid method now. TeachFur, there's another model that we have that incorporates classrooms working with community members in mock internships and real life, real purpose situations and all their units. And we do a lot of your just regular best practices and stuff. I'm one of the co-founders, and I work as our chief operating officer. We're a small business with a small team, so I really operate also as our chief marketing officer, CFO, HR manager, and just about anything else you can think of. We all wear a lot of hats, but really what I try to do is just work to make sure that we're doing everything we can to first take care of our team. And then a very, very, very close second is take care of our partner schools and all those teachers that are changing the world. We're just trying to do what we can to help them.
And in your work, you say that you have seen many commonalities, connections between some of the teaching better classroom management stuff and then, you know, nonprofit, government, business, organizational management stuff. Can you lay out that link for us?
Yeah, I think the biggest link, to keep it really simple, is relationships, relationships, relationships. And then environment and culture. So I come from a background in the restaurant industry, managing restaurants, a wide variety of those, also in the entertainment industry for a little while. And I've been pretty much most of my life, ever since when I got my first job and was able to get promoted to a shift level management, I've been in management my entire life in a supervisor role. And now with our team, it's a little bit different. But so many commonalities there. And then Chad and I started seeing all these connections between like how we needed to build things and run things in our business. And the connections they had to the management in the classroom. And one of the biggest things we saw was like this need for strong foundational relationships and building the right environment, the right culture. So like whether you're in a classroom, a restaurant, entertainment company, marketing firm, insurance agency, whatever it is, you need to build a culture of trust, of positivity, and to build that synergy. And you need that environment that promotes growth, that promotes passion, that promotes excitement around what you're trying to do. And in order to do all that, you've got to build the relationships first. Whether that's building relationships with your students to understand where they're at, what they need, and how to reach them, or if it's working with that new employee or that struggling employee and building that. And from an employee standpoint, if I'm on a team, understand that I'm also a massive part of building that culture and building that environment and how I interact with my colleagues, how I interact with my supervisors, and how do I build those relationships so that I can understand how do I do my job the best I can to make my supervisor's job easier, because that's going to make my life easier, and so on and so forth. So it all comes down, in my mind, it all comes down to those relationships. It's the foundation of everything.
Okay, so intriguing. Relationships, relationships, relationships. Can you maybe paint a picture for us? So what does it look like for those world-class teachers? I guess you're going to say relationships, but what does that look like in practice in terms of what are they doing? What are the key differentiators that these rock stars who are getting huge student learning attainment gains, test scores, improvements, rocking out versus the rest of teachers who are kind of, you know, getting by, doing okay. What are the things they're doing differently? How are they working their relationships or classroom behaviors in a different way?
Yeah, I mean, the relationships are a huge piece of that, because, you know, any kind of management system you put in place in your classroom, any kind of new technology or awesome new innovative type of experience or anything like that you bring, lesson plan that you bring in, it's going to fall apart if you don't have the relationships to build on that. The same thing is, I can have the best business plan in the world, but if my team just can't operate because there's no relationship, there's no culture, there's no environment, it's not going to work. But I think on top of that, you know, these teachers that we see that are just amazing like that, they just have a refusal to quit. They refuse to quit. We call it the teach better mindset. It's this relentless pursuit of better. It's not perfect. It's never going to be perfect. It's just better. Better today than you were yesterday. Better tomorrow than you were today. That's what we preach on. And it's never this, hey, we want to change everything you do. Hey, it's you got to fix everything or you're not good. It's you can always be better. And the champions that we see, these teachers that are doing amazing things, is they always look every day, they're reflecting, they're self-aware, and they're always thinking, what can I do to be better? How can I reach more kids? It's never enough until I'm reaching 110% of them, right? So I think the teachers that refuse to accept anything but the best for their students and who go above and beyond every single day to do whatever it is that they need to do to support those kids. And if you think about it, they're spending their days just pouring love into other people's kids. I mean, those are world changers. Like, they dedicate so much to it. And I think it's really just that refusal to accept anything. And they're willing to take risk and put themselves on the line and challenge themselves every single day, every single second of every day to do better and be better for the kids. Those are the ones that are really making those differences.
All right. That's awesome. Maybe you could share a story in terms of a teacher who's really just doing that great. So I just sort of get a sense for build relationships and never quit. What does that look like in practice?
I can think of a lot of stories, but so I'll paint, like, I mean, it's slightly general, more general, but like, it's the teacher that you mentioned that's already doing pretty well. Right. So I'll talk about Ray Hewer, who's one of she's on our team, but she's also a phenomenal teacher, which is why we tricked her into working with us. So Ray was a good teacher. She was doing well. She did well on her observations. She was reaching most of her students. They did well. The bell curve looked like it should. The average kid was doing well. And she could have easily skated by and been okay and just probably had a good career, probably worked her way up to, you know, maybe being a principal one day. That was she was going to go back and get her license in. She's got the personality and the charisma to where she could have easily got into an admin position and probably, you know, had a nice career. But early on, she decided she was not okay with being okay. And she looked and she said, my kids are engaged, but are they as engaged as they possibly can be? My kids are doing well, but are they doing as well as they absolutely can be? I'm reaching most of my kids, but am I really okay with most of my kids? Does any teacher wake up and say, man, I hope I hit some of my kids today? Like, that'd be great. No, I wake up and I say, I want to have every single one of my kids grow today. And I think it was that passion in her. And then, like, again, that's refusal to quit. But the way she did it, she said, this isn't working. I've got a lot of great pieces, but I need other pieces. She actually developed our Teach Further model. She's the one who, like, that was one of the things that caught her eyes. And she said, how can I take what I'm doing, these fun activities, and really make sure that I'm not just putting in fluff? Ray's biggest thing is fluff is not enough. And by fluff, I mean, it's really, you know, it's easy to, not easy, but it's easier to create a classroom that looks really cool on Instagram, that looks really fun and engaging. But if there's no purpose underneath it, there's no connection to what they actually need to learn in the real world application of what they're learning in your classroom, it's just fluff. It's not actually doing much other than just being fun for Instagram. And so she said, how can I do that? How can I make these connections? And then she started reaching out and calling companies, businesses, saying, I have this idea. I'm wondering if you'd take this crazy journey with me and allow my students to operate in a mock internship with your company. And here's how I'm going to connect it to my math standard. Here's how I'm going to connect it to my ELA standard. And the way that she started connecting pieces to real world applications to these seemingly boring math standards and things like that is phenomenal. And now we've since then been able to help teachers all over connect with major companies and businesses and do some amazing things. But she's a great example of that teacher that you were talking about, that rockstar teacher that just said, I could be okay, I can be comfortable, I can get by, but I refuse to do that. You flip that, you see it in corporate world. I saw it in my time of when I was managing people in the restaurant industry of kids who came in, you know, a lot of time. I was in the quick service industry. Kids who come in a lot of times, it's the first job, first opportunity at maybe taking a management position or have a little bit of responsibility. And you have some that said, I'll just do what I need to do because I'm just here while I'm figuring out what I'm doing with my life because I'm going to college. It's a part-time thing. And others that looked at it and said, if I'm here, I'm going to be the best here I possibly can be. I'm going to learn everything I can. I'm going to pick the brains of the people that are here. And maybe I'll end up in this place forever and I'll retire here. Or at the very least, I'm going to take it and make sure I get the most out of this experience so that when I go into the next part of my journey, my life, I can be the best I can be there. And I think that's the same thing when it comes to any industry you're in, any job you're in. It's this refusal to just settle for being okay. I mean, we spend, more than 60% of our lives at our jobs. So if you're just being okay, that means you're just being okay for the majority of your life. And I don't know. I'm not okay with that, but
Okay, so I'm hearing you there. So it starts with having a higher standard, a higher bar in terms of, okay, we're going to be the best possibly can. We refuse to quit. So once you've got that commitment, that fire in play, let's talk about this relationship stuff. So how does one go about forging great relationships?
It's a couple things. So I biggest thing with me is I think it's Karen. It's actually Karen, though. I have this thing that I talk about a lot where some people do things because the book tells them to. And by the book, I mean the manual or the best practice or the person who says this is how you should do your job or whatever. And there are some people that do it because they actually care. A really simplified answer is in a restaurant where an elderly couple is at a table and you go to have a conversation with them. The difference between going there because, well, that's good customer service and our manual says we should focus on customer service versus I'm going there because just possibly those are grandparents who haven't seen their grandson who's about my age in a long time, and I can give them a little glimpse and reminder of that grandson they haven't seen for a while. I can have a conversation with them and brighten their day. Those are very big differences. And the same thing when it comes to building relationships with your employees, with your colleagues, with your students. It's actually Karen, and it's not I'm doing this because it's going to better me and make my life better, even though it will, but it's focusing on how can I help make your day better? How can I actually learn because I actually want to help you? I think in the more tactical piece, it's actually fairly simple. Chad Ostrowski says it all the time, is have 1,000 conversations about nothing. Like truly get to understand in that person, dig down and figure out what they're actually about, like, and build that. You talk about like authentic relationships. Authentic relationships isn't Pete likes to be rewarded at work. It's no, why does Pete like that? What is the actual reason behind that? What's going on in Pete's real life that connects him? Why is recognition at work so valuable to him? So that I can truly understand what truly drives you. And I think work with teachers on that. The teachers that truly understand what their students need and what drives them and each individual student, they're the ones that reach them. They build those relationships and that student wants to work for them. And I think that's the biggest piece of that is truly actually caring and then having those conversations to dig down and actually understand those people.
Well, no, that's intriguing. When it comes to the actually caring part, I'd love to get your take. If you don't actually care on a given day because you're tired, you're stressed, you're overworked, you got so many distractions, whatever your reasons, I'm going to assume you're not just like an evil, hateful person. But on a given day, you don't actually care.
Sure.
What do you recommend to get back into that zone?
So there's, I guess, two parts to that. One is my thing would be figure out why you don't care that day and see if there's something you can do to fix that. But sometimes there just isn't anything you can do. You try to leave it in your car, you can't, and you just don't have it in you. So then it's, you may still want to practice that because that's still important to your, in your role, but also to that person. It's important for them to, because you still need to understand them. So you still need to dig there. So you may have to practice the fact that, hey, today I got to put on a face and I got to make sure that I'm still digging. I'm still building these relationships. I'm still letting them know that I care. But you can't be fake about it. So if you're going to come off fake and they're going to see through it, that's going to ruin a lot of the progress you made. So you may have to kind of take a day off, or maybe it's, hey, it's not quite as many conversations. It's not digging up in as deep. But I think the key to that is figuring out, why don't I care today? How do I fix that? It's one thing to just be down and be like, hey, I'm not in the mood for conversations. That's understandable. But like actually not caring, you're like, I just don't care about anybody today. Like there's something else going on there in my mind that needs to be addressed first and figure out like, why am I not feeling this way today? And if I'm feeling that way, is it actually going to be harmful if I try to engage with my colleague or with my student or this way because I'm putting off some negativity? And so having that self-awareness and reflection on that, I think, is important. And figure out, okay, how do I get back onto it tomorrow so that I can be authentic again and get back into doing what I need to do?
And I like the example you brought about with the waiter or waitress in terms of, hey, these grandparents may not have seen a really young person in a while. And so this could mean that for them. So that seems to be a little bit of the formula with regard to I am putting myself in their shoes and recognizing how the thing I'm doing here can make a world of a difference. And for teachers, that's huge. Like, hey, what happens here can set the stage for whether learning and growth and development are headed to, I know, college or career or interesting fulfillment jobs or a much less pleasant, you know, life trajectory for folks. So that's that, as well as medicine. But I think that some of the other fields, I think can require a little bit of thought at times to zero in on who is it that we're serving and how is what I'm doing today potentially going to be transformationally amazing for them?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to understand, like, yeah, who you're serving, regardless of what industry you're in, and what kind of engagement can help whatever it is that they're coming to you for. And I mean, obviously in the hospitality industry, it's a lot of that communication and being friendly, and because you never know what kind of day they're having. And if you can put a smile on their face, that might be the first time all day. Same thing in the classroom. It's like, you know, you don't know. It takes so long to figure out, what are those kids coming to school with? What else do they have? What other things are they carrying emotionally? And you might be the only person in the world that's showing them love for the day. That's showing them that you care for the day. Like, that's massive. The same can be said for your employee or your boss or your colleague. Like, everyone's got something going on, right? And you don't know if the guy in the cubicle next to you or the girl down the hall in the other office is struggling with something, and just a simple quick smile, a hello, a how are you, actual, like, authentic, I care, I actually am asking you, I want to know, how are you doing today, what's going on, like, that can make the world of a difference to somebody. And if you have a culture in your small business, big, large business, whatever, that has that, and everyone's feeling that way, like, the opportunity for negativity to seep in is far less, which is better, beneficial for everybody.
You know, I like what you said about the difference a smile can make. It reminds me one time, just a few months ago, I was in church, and there was someone who just, like, smiling, like, completely and thoroughly. And I was like, wow, hi, that feels really good. and then I realized that she was looking at my baby.
Oh, there you go. That'll do it, right?
I guess puts you in a good mood.
Oh, sure.
You know, she's looking adorable. But I was like, oh, wow, it's pretty rare that you actually get, which feels like a genuine, authentic, full-on smile. Like, I'm enjoying seeing you. And babies get it, but we don't as much.
Yeah. And, you know, the crazy thing is the smile, like, it's crazy what a smile does for you. So there's an author, an amazing educator named Adam Welcome. He wrote a book called Kids Deserve It, which is a massive hit in the education world. But then he also wrote a book called Run Like a Pirate, and it's an amazing book. If you pick it up, it's a short, easy read, but it's phenomenal. It's like his story of, in 2017, he ran a marathon every single month because Adam's just intense. But in the book, he talks about, like, one of his tactics for sort of, like, getting through that mental game of running, and I'm a runner, this is why it's big for me, but it's to just smile. And it's funny, like, when I run now, like, if I feel like I'm having a hard time getting over the mental hurdle, I will smile. But then what's funny is then I remember the fact that I'm smiling because Adam's book said it, which makes me, like, kind of chuckle. And I smile, and I'm telling you, man, it's like a whole nother level. Like, it just does something to you. Like, it's crazy. So if you can give someone a smile, maybe they give you a smile back, and now you get your, like, your authentic smile to yourself. Like, it's going to warm your soul and their soul. Like, I'm a huge fan of that. Like, just, if you walk around, I mean, we so often as humans just do anything we can to avoid contact. Or avoid eye contact, right? Like, we look down, we just don't do anything. I try really hard, and I don't do it every day, but I try really hard to just smile at people and say hi to as many people as I can, because, again, you don't know what they're going through. Like, that's just, it's such an important thing in my mind.
And to your point about having 1,000 conversations about nothing, in a way, I like that feeling that sentence creates, because it's sort of like, you can just chill out. It's like, I'm not like I am intentionally trying to tease out 14 precise takeaways from this discussion, but it's like, we're going to talk about, oh, you like pizza? That's cool. What are your favorite topics? Oh yeah, sausage is the best, you know, whatever. And in so doing, you build up a picture. But that being said, could you share what are some of the conversations about nothing that are often quite telling and they deliver something?
Yeah, I mean, simple conversations about, like, what'd you do this weekend? What are you up to tonight? And then playing off that of, like, oh, like, do you watch this? Do you watch This Is Us, right? Do you cry mm-hmm. during movies? Do you, you said it, like, pizza, like, or, I mean, it's a million different ways. And with students, a lot of times, it's what'd you do this weekend? And then that opens up another question, like, you know, oh, like, noticing something that maybe they have a graphic t-shirt on, like, oh, do you like The Incredible Hulk or Hulk or whatever? Get in that. Your coworkers can simply just be like, and maybe they have a shirt on, you know, depending on the dress code and stuff, but it could be asking them what they did this weekend. What are they up to this weekend? What do they think about this or that? Did they catch the game last night? Have they seen that new movie? Whatever it might be. They have just those conversations that just start a conversation about nothing and give you a chance to just sort of learn a little bit about them. Because the way someone tells you about their weekend or explains what they liked or disliked about a movie or the team they cheer for, something like that, tells you little bits and pieces about that person. You get someone talking, I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. So you connect with a Cleveland Browns fan and you connect with another Cleveland Browns fan. That's a bond that like can't be shook. So those little, and a lot of sports teams are like that. Like that's such a connection that you may not know that you have with a colleague or with your boss or whatever. And that simple little connection can change the way you guys communicate forever, because now there's that little like, oh, that's typical Browns, right? There's this little, these little inside jokes that automatically form, or you love that show, or I'm a huge fan of Friends, the TV show Friends from way back when. Like, I had an employee of mine that we worked with, I think 5 years he was with us, and he had autism, but he was a incredible worker, worked really hard, and he would have moments where he had some struggles and he got frustrated with usually being directed, because he was pretty good at his job, but if we needed to direct him, sometimes took him wrong, he had a lot of stuff in his life that was dealing with. And people would have struggle with him, because when he got that mode, it was kind of like you weren't going to break him. And I would literally just rattle off lines to an episode of Friends, and we would just get going. And it was just this ridiculous back and forth that no one else understood, because unless they happened to know that one weird episode, but it would just crack him out of this thing. And it was this little piece that took me a while to figure out through just random conversations, where one day, I don't even remember the actual conversation, but we were talking, I don't remember the situation, but the conversation we were just talking, and I said something, I can't remember what the line was, that reminded him of the episode. And he goes, oh, that's like the time Joey said da-da-da, and we repeated it. And we're like, ooh, instant connection. I now have my bond with you. We now have a million inside jokes that we can laugh about, and I now have something that I can pull out to help you get out of a funk if you get into it. And that's just like, for me, that made my life managing shifts that he was on so much easier.
Well, and I'm curious, as you're having these conversations about nothing, you're forming some relationships, you're learning all kinds of little things. I mean, especially in the context of a teacher with a classroom of, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 plus students. How do you keep all that straight? Do you recommend any particular systems or tracking or note keeping? What do you do?
Well, you know, we've seen teachers do a million different things. Some teachers are just amazing at it, just really, really good at it. There's a lot of different types of things. At the beginning of the year, working with some teachers, do picture things where the kids get to, you know, share their stories with along with pictures, and then the teacher sort of has that on the walls or on a document or something like that, where they have that sort of resource. But you know, you're also spending every single day with those students, so you're getting to know it. They become, it's just like your colleagues at work. I mean, you're spending, if you're with the same 10, 15 people every day at work for 60% of your life, like they're becoming, whether you like it or not, they're in your life as much as a best friend would be. So you're able to build that. So I think big pieces is much easier if you're truly caring. I'll go back to that, because like, I don't have any trouble remembering which one of my friends likes this or likes that, because they're my friends. I know that information because I care about them, and I built it in an authentic way, not because I was supposed to, because my job said so. So it's tough to remember, okay, what's employee A1's favorite food. It's easier to remember what's Max's favorite food, because I've built a relationship now, versus I learned it because I'm supposed to, because my job will be easier. And I think the same thing with the teachers. Teachers who truly care about their students, like they remember, oh, that's Johnny. He has the brothers that do this, and the mom that struggles with that, or he lives with his aunt, or he has this, and oh, that's Sarah, and she has these things. I think comes with the actual caring that comes in that situation. So I think teachers are naturally inclined to be really, really good at that, because their heart's there in the first place. They're trying to do something amazing and reach those kids. But I really think it comes down to the actually caring about the people that you're working with and the people you're serving, and truly wanting to learn about them.
You know, it's funny to keep coming back to this caring. And we recently had an interview with Alden Mills, who's a Navy SEAL, and his whole thing was caring. He has a framework, CARE, C-A-R-E. Each of the letters has multiple subcomponents that start with a C and an A and an R and an E. So it's kind of fun little connections here. So let's talk about, what are your great phrases that you have for your business, is that you help teachers to reach the unreachable. So we've talked about some principles that are applicable across students, but if you got a particular employee or student who is noteworthily, seemingly unreachable, what do you do?
It's going to feel like I'm coming back again and again, but it's the relationship. It's understand them, like truly understand the person, to figure out who they are, what drives them, and why they've been deemed unreachable. So when it comes to employees, it's figuring out what are their strengths, what are their struggles, and then working with them to play on those strengths and focus on those strengths while still trying to build those struggle points, and focus really on what drives them. You know, one of your colleagues, one of your employees might be driven by just by financial gain. Like, they're driven by money, and that's okay, but understand what drives them versus someone who's driven by admiration and wants to be looked at as an incredible employee or the best colleague around or whatever it might be. When it comes to the classroom, it's finding out what's driving your student. Are they struggling? Are they quote-unquote unreachable because they come from a really rough home and their entire life they've been told that they're dumb and they fail and they're stupid and they're not good at school and no one's giving them a shot because they struggled when they were younger, and now it's just, you know, now they're in seventh or eighth grade and it's just been the cycle of failure. Where Chad talks a lot about the cycle of failure. So if you think about a student who goes to school in first grade, like, that student's, every student who goes to first grade is like, I got my backpack on, I got my new shoes, I'm ready to go, right? I'm gonna be awesome. And they go and they try really hard and they get an F. You failed. That's all right, that's all right, I'm gonna get it next year. Second grade, they go and they're pumped up, I'm gonna try really, really hard, I'm gonna do awesome. You failed, you got an F. Oh, okay. All right, well, I'm going to try really hard next year. I go to third. And again, by the time they hit that fifth, sixth grade, they start doing some quick math in their head. And they're like, huh, you know, if I try really, really hard, I get an F. But if I don't do anything at all, I also get an F. Mm. That's a lot easier. Boom, stamped with unreachable. And what happens is, unfortunately, they get kind of written off. And so then you get this little like, oh, watch out for so-and-so. He's unreachable. You're like, you're not going to be able to get him. He's in trouble. He's going to whatever. The difference is when a teacher chooses to say, yeah, I don't accept that. I'm going to figure out why that student, what's really happened? Why are they struggling? And Chad, this is actually like, I love that you asked that because it's actually, you know, the story Chad tells a lot about it. One of his students, Jesse, who was that kid. He was a kid who everyone, he was on all those lists that teachers say they don't have in the top 10. And it actually ended up where Chad had him at the end of the day. And for a couple of weeks, Chad never saw him. So he thought maybe he moved because transiency was pretty common in those types of, that type of community and stuff. But he asked his colleagues, like, where's Jesse? I haven't seen him. Did they move? And they're like, oh, no, he's just getting kicked out of class before he gets to yours. He's getting sent down to in-school suspension. So Chad asked if he could go get him, worked out a deal with his principal and stuff, and actually started going to get him because he had built a relationship with Jesse. And he knew, look, this kid's just been struggling his whole life. He's never had anyone tell him that he was worth it. The long story short is that Chad was able to connect with him because Chad started to understand that if Jesse had some time to work through things a little bit and had opportunity to fail a few times and try again and try again without being told I'm dumb, because a lot of times when students get to a certain point, they get that F or that D, their mind goes up, I'm stupid, I'm not good, I don't do well at school, I'm not good at school. And Chad figured out, well, if I can give him some time to work on that, and if I'm working my class and managing my class the right way, and I have some time to maybe read aloud to Jesse to help work through these things, I bet he can do better. And he did. He started doing really well. Obviously still had some issues here and there and stuff, but ended up doing really, actually ended up getting a B in the class. It's an awesome story that Chad tells that I won't go into because he's much better. But I think it's the same thing. You know, I think about the employee I was just talking about. It's a similar thing. Like when he got into those modes, it was just like, well, here he goes again. Like, and he's just written off. Like, you can't get to him. And this isn't to say that I'm anything special or anything, but I was able to find a way to connect with him to get him out of that. He went from being unreachable to reachable, and now, boom, he was back to doing his job well. And so I think that goes for whether it's an employee, whether it's your colleague, whatever it is. Like, everyone's got something going on. It all comes back to this getting to know that person and truly understanding them and figuring out, okay, what drives them? Like, and then also what takes them to this spot where they're quote unquote unreachable. And then what can I do to get them out of that? Like, you don't need to be a boss to be the person that gets an employee out of a funk. Sometimes the best person to do that is a colleague, right? Mm. And it's just like, sometimes it takes another student to do it. But, you know, I think it's really focusing on understanding that person and what drives them, what they need at that time.
Okay. Well, I'd also love to get your take when it comes to teaching and the actual delivery of learning content. What are some of the key principles that make communication engaging versus kind of lame and boring and not so engaging?
I think this goes the same. This carries over. It's one of the things that we see that carries over both in the classroom and all other industries when it comes to training and teaching and redirecting all this type of thing is focusing on the why. So why am I teaching you this content? Why do you need to know that? And it's the same why as like, why do we do this or that in this particular way in this company? Like, you can choose to just say, because I'm the boss and I said so, because I'm the teacher and I said you have to do this, you know, and this is how we've always done it. Or you can go beyond just barking orders and show them why it needs to be done. So I talked about Ray earlier and the teach further model. And that's one of the big things is we're going beyond just the, hey, let's just do this because the state says we have to hit these standards. But let's actually focus on, why do you need to know this? Like, why do you need to understand math? for the real world. Like, why do you have to understand this concept? Why is understanding history important? Why should you learn coding? Like, what are you going to do with your life? And let's connect this, and let me show you how this is connected to real world applications they can do it. One of the awesome things about the Teach Further model is there's a piece of that at the end of every lesson where, or every unit, where we're actually sending home, teachers are sending home what we call a planner for the future page, which is to the parents or the stakeholders, whoever it is, the guardians, that says, this is what we learned. This is the state standard it hit. This is how we did it. Here's some of the things that your students showed that means that maybe they would be interested in a couple of these fields. And by the way, if they are interested in these fields, here's the type of education they may need to do after high school. And we're doing this at sixth grade levels, at fifth grade levels, at eighth grade levels, way before they get to the, even before they get to high school, because they need to be understanding that early on so they can apply all the stuff that they're learning through the rest of their school into real life things. And it's the same thing when you're in the business world and you're training employees and stuff. It's like, I can tell you just do that because that's how you're supposed to do it because the rule book says it. Or I can explain to you why the rule book says it. Why have we determined that this, the way of doing this thing or that thing is the best? And how does that affect everything else that happens? Because what I'm essentially doing is saying, hey, this is why your job's important. Why your role in this company is important. Because if you do this like this, this is what happens and it ends up doing this for our customers. If you don't, here's how it bottlenecks or falls down and we don't get there. And so that's a way that I think takes it from even the person who goes, man, my job's just, I just do these numbers and da 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 whatever. But it's not. It's like, if you don't do those numbers, then XYZ doesn't happen. And somewhere down the line, it ends up happening that we don't serve our clients. There's an old story, and I don't remember what it, I can't remember who told it originally, where I heard it, but it was an interview with, they were interviewing a bunch of people at NASA before, like when we were getting ready to launch to the moon way back when, and they were talking to a janitor and they asked, like, what do you do? And he said, I'm working to put a man on the moon. And like his understanding that if those halls weren't clean, if the garbage wasn't taken care of, if the labs weren't clean, like that affects the progress of everyone else and could potentially interrupt someone who's trying to make a breakthrough to figure out how do we get to the moon. Like you can break that down. Like every little piece of an organization is so important that if you focus on explaining to your team and everyone and to students the same way, like why is it important that you're doing what you're doing and the way you're doing it and we're learning these things? How does that affect the outcome? How does that positively impact what we're trying to do? I think that's how you get there.
Well, and I really dig that because you unpack the explanation of a why on a few dimensions, which I think is great. Is one is, you know, historically, this is what we've discovered and how we ended up here and the formulation of it is the way it is for this reason. And then this is what happens if you do it. And this is what happens if you don't. And so then that paints a picture like, well, shoot, this is pretty important. Like I matter.
Yeah. And that's the key, right? I matter because who's going to work harder? Someone who just thinks they push papers or someone who thinks these papers matter? Like that person who thinks the papers matter. If you're a manager listening or a supervisor listening, one of the other little side effects that this does, and you may not like it, but you should like it, is that if you're explaining to people why you do things a certain way, it opens up the door for them to recommend other ways. And sometimes as managers and owners and whatever, we don't want to hear it. But it's really important to close your mouth on that and listen because they may have something you never thought of because they're at the ground level and that's crucial. And it's just, and we see it in classrooms too, where if you're explaining to the students why do they need to understand that, they'll come up with other reasons. They'll be like, oh, or because X, Y, Z. And you're like, I didn't even think of that connection.
Also that. Thank you.
Like, yeah, I'm going to throw that in my next time I talk to a student. But it's the same thing in a company, like saying like, hey, this is why we do it. And they're like, oh, that's great. Why don't we do it like this? And you're like, oh, we probably should. Let's change that. Like, it's just, it's powerful in so many different levels.
That's good. That's real nice. Well, so we hit the grid method a couple times in terms of little references, but I just can't help myself. When I hear grid method, I'm already visualizing a grid and I got to know what does it consist of and how might it be applied to folks learning and growing and developing in a grown-up work context?
Yeah. So what the grid method is a framework for utilizing mastery learning in classrooms. So when I say mastery learning, there's a lot that could go into that. But in general, it's a shift from standing at the front of the classroom, delivering content to all the students all at the same time and expecting them to move all at the same time to shifting to mastery learning, which is where students are moving at their own pace and only moving on as they master the content, as they master certain pieces of it. And a lot of organizations already do a similar version of mastery learning where you're in a training program and you have to master a certain level of skill or understanding before you can move on to the next. I think the difference is, and the focus is, the speed at which in education and in a lot of businesses, we set a certain timetable and we say, well, it should take you 2 weeks to learn this. And if you don't learn it in 2 weeks, I guess you're just not good enough for it. Or in classrooms, it's if you don't lose it in 2 weeks, too bad. Like, you fail, we're moving on, right? If you don't understand 2 plus 2, we're moving on to 2 times 2, and you're just never going to get it at all, ever. And I think the biggest thing is that individuality, because we need to understand that we all, one, learn differently, and two, learn at different speeds. So if you think about it, a real great way to break it down is, like, think about the, you have a couple kids at home, correct?
That's right.
Okay, so when you were teaching the walk, or maybe you're doing it right now, you probably did it like most people, where you stood them up and they, you know, they fell a lot. They crawled, then they fell, and then they started using whatever they could grab onto, right? Your leg or the furniture or whatever, and then eventually they figured it out. Now they run around like crazy if they're like my kids. Mm-hmm. But what if I told you that the way I did with my kids is I took my son Jonathan, I said, all right, man, we're going to do this. We're going to practice for 2 weeks. And then we're going to work on it. I'm going to work with you. You're going to fall and everything like this. And then at the end of 2 weeks, I said, all right, Jonathan, here's what we're going to do. You stand there. I'm going to stand the prescribed 10 feet away from you. And now you need to walk to me. And he takes a couple steps, stumbles, boom, falls. And I said, well, sorry, son, you failed your walking test. I guess we're going to just not learn how to walk. We're going to move on to potty training.
No.
it's ridiculous, right?
Yeah.
But then when we get into school and in the business, we say, hey, you got 2 weeks to learn this, or you got a week to learn this. And if you don't, I guess you're just not going to get it. And I always wonder, like, how many potentially amazing employees are we not giving a shot to because we wrote them off because they didn't get it quick enough?
Yeah.
Same in education. It's too many students get written off as unreachable or not smart, not good test takers, not good at math, because we gave them a short amount of time and we expected them to move at the same speed as everyone else. Well, we all learn differently how to walk and different speeds. Some kids walk at a year, some take some 3 years. I mean, same with talking, same with learning how to ride a bike, learning everything like that. So the framework and just the mastery learning shift in general is focusing on the individual and where they're actually at, focusing on what they actually need and when they need it, versus when we think they should have it. And I think that's the biggest piece we drive, that helps drive mastery of the content, whether you're in a school, business, whatever.
That's good. And so where's the grid come into play?
So the grid, essentially, so when we work with teachers, one of the first things we do is we help them look at their state standards and what they have to meet, what the state says that they're supposed to be teaching. And we help them break them down and align them to the essential questions that they need to ask their students, that they need to have their students understand. And then that breaks down into learning opportunities and activity, the actual activities that students are doing in order to master the content. So then they take all those learning opportunities, which you can think of like a lesson plan, right? We call them learning opportunities because a lesson is something you give someone. A learning opportunity is something they have to take. So we purposely use those words. But it becomes, the grid becomes the learning path for the student to move. It's their guide. It's their map, if you will. It's this formed of little squares that have activities in them. It explains what they need to do, whatever it is that they're doing, whether that's vocabulary words, whether that's a science experiment, whatever it might be, and then what they need to do in order to be checked off for mastery. So students move through these. And so I go and I do what I need to do in square one. And when I'm ready to be checked and I feel I've mastered that, I check in with the teacher, or there might be a self-assessment or automatic assessment through technology. I cannot move on to that next square until I've mastered that content and I've shown my mastery at least an 85% or higher level of mastery. And then I move on. So the grid, if you can visualize, is just a piece of paper with levels, 5 different levels of those squares. And as students start from the bottom, they build that foundational level knowledge. As they move up, the depth of knowledge that's required, the level of mastery that's required, grows. So there's fewer boxes because there's fewer activities because they're a little more in depth as they move on. And then as they move up and they level up in that grid, they're getting deeper and deeper into that content and into that concept and into that. So a grid itself would encompass basically sort of like what you would consider like a unit of study. Some units might require multiple grids. Some are just one grid. So it varies teacher to teacher how much they want to pack in there.
When we talk about the grids, is there something in particular that's on the x-axis and on the y-axis?
So yeah, so going up on the side there is your levels of depth, your depth of knowledge. So
across, yeah. All right.
The one across is dependent on your, so your x is your, is depends on the, those are your learning opportunities, right? Those individual mm-hmm. boxes that say, this is what you're going to do to help to practice and then show your mastery. Along the moving upwards is their levels. So when I say depth of knowledge, we're referring to, we build it off of, it's called Webb's depth of knowledge. And there's levels and it's moving up. It's the level of understanding. So as they move up, those levels are showing the level of understanding they're at. Now, most, you know, we do, there's actually four levels in WEBS. We do five levels because we put like an independent exploration up top for those students that just excel and blow through it so that once they master the content, they can go have fun with it and learn more about it. Most standards are written in that two, three, sometimes four range, typically the 2-3 range. So most of your students are going to end up around that level, but you have students that are moving all at the same or at different paces based on what they need. And so what this does then is allows those students that are just get it, and they're just like, we call them rabbits, that are just really quick and they just get it, they can move and they can keep learning, they can grow. They don't have to wait for the student that maybe struggles. But that student that needs a little more time, that needs a few attempts to try to get it because they just don't get it, now they have the time to do that. You can spend time with them either one-on-one or small groups to assess where they're at, where they're struggling, find other ways to explain it to them. Also, side note, build those relationships really nice there and stuff and move on. So, because what you'll find is most students struggle because of one of two reasons. Either one, they already get it and they're bored. And so they just check out of your class. And a lot of times that leads to problems. That's where you have like these extremely gifted students that are really intelligent, but they cause problems. They're just bored. And they're like, why am I learning this? I already know it. I don't need to do this. This is a waste of my time. Or you have the student that's just struggling because maybe they've struggled. They have trouble with reading. So like just basic, simple vocabulary work is really tough for them. And they're struggling because they're getting yanked along. And it's like, oh, you don't know 2 + 2. So we're moving on. Right now I'm frustrated because I don't get it. So now I'm lost forever. And it's just been a cycle. So by folks giving everyone the time they need, you're hitting that top level and all the way down to the bottom level of students getting what they need. And they're allowed to move on when they need to move on, but they can take a little more time when they need a little more time. So, and then, you know, there's a lot of pieces that go along with that on how to manage that and stuff. And that's where a lot of our training comes into is like, all right, and how we created a grid, but then also how does this work in my classroom? Because it can be a little scary to think of 20, 30 students all moving and doing different things at different times. And that's a big mindset shift for a lot of teachers.
Cool. Well, tell me, Jeff, anything else you want to make sure to mention before we shift gears and hear about some of your favorite things?
Let's go.
Jeff's talking a lot about actually caring, and I recommend you also actually take care of yourself. And our sponsor, Care Of, helps you do just that in many great ways. And something I've been digging from them lately is their protein supplements. Care Of provides personalized protein, so personalized, in fact, that you even put your name on the protein tub. They've got wholesome, clean ingredients, whether that comes from free-range grass-fed cows or vegan plant protein made of organic peas, hemp seeds, and pumpkin seeds. When I take it, it genuinely tastes more like real food than other protein powders I've tried, which I appreciate. And my wife appreciates that it's free of soy. My pea protein, fun fact, is also free of milk, eggs, peanuts, fish, shellfish, and wheat. That's a lot of stuff it's free of. I find the protein supplementation super handy when I want to make a meal a little bit more filling. I'm not quite full yet, but I should probably stop eating. Oh, a quick little protein shake is nice. Or to provide a quality snack a super quick without having to think at all. Just, you know, put it in and shake and there you go. For 50% off of your first Care Of order, you can go to takecareof.com and enter the promo code BEAWESOME50 at checkout. That's spelled BEAWESOME number 50 at checkout. So to get that 50% off, you visit takecareof.com and enter the promo code BEAWESOME50 at checkout. I also want to give a huge shout out to something that helps me when I'm in student mode, which is every day, and that's Blinkist. Blinkist is the only app that takes the best key takeaways, the need to know tidbits of information from thousands of nonfiction books, and then condenses them down into just 15 minutes so you can read or listen to them oh so fast. Blinkist is made for busy people like you who want to get to the main points of a book quickly without reading the whole book. And I also love using it as a means of sampling books to see if I love it enough to go ahead and invest the time to read the whole darn thing, or if I could just be content to have that quick 15-minute summary and move on to the next. With their audio feature, Blinkist makes it easy to finish even 4 whole books a day while you're just on the go commuting and walking around taking care of business. They got a massive and growing library, including things like self-help, business, health, and history books. And I particularly enjoy listening to Blinkist as I'm winding down to fall asleep. It gives my brain a little interesting tickle, but doesn't zap my eyeballs with engaging blue light, which could make it harder to fall asleep and have a suboptimal slumber session. You could also get Blinkist summaries from many of our current and future guests. They got David Allen of Getting Things Done. They got The One Thing by Gary Papasan. and a whole lot more. So for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer for us. If you go to Blinkist.com/awesome, you can start your free 7-day trial. That's Blinkist, spelled Blinkist.com/awesome for a free 7-day trial. How about a favorite quote, something you find inspiring?
But it's some people dream of success, others wake up and work hard at it. And I think that's true no matter where you're at in your life.
And how about a favorite study or experiment or bit of research?
So I don't do a lot of studies and stuff, but there's one that I found a while back. I don't know what it is. It's from the University of California, Berkeley. And it was just a study on happiness, like what is happiness? And the biggest thing that I'll refer back to it every now and then, but really just sort of the summary of it and the fact that like happiness isn't about money or things. It's about fulfillment. It's not about what others think. It's not about keeping up with the Joneses and stuff like that. It's about what you need and what's important to you. And, you know, for a long time, I felt like I needed to be like a certain person, a certain level of success, make a certain amount of money, do certain things, whatever. But all I really needed was to find something that I love doing and that I'm good at and that I find a purpose in. And I think I just love that about happiness.
And how about a favorite book?
The Go-Giver. Bob Berg. It's one of my all-time favorite. I love it. I have quotes. I have to find that episode. I got to dig through that episode. I actually have massive final prints of the laws all over my walls. Live by them. So.
And how about a favorite tool? Something that helps you be awesome at your job.
I live and die in Basecamp. We use it as our project management. I use it as self-reminders, project management. Our team lives in. We're all virtual, so that's massive for us. And then I also use an app on my phone called the 5-Minute Journal. That's really just a morning sort of gratitude and self-awareness, and then a evening reflection that just sets me up for the day and allows me to reflect every day. Love it.
And a favorite habit?
Favorite habit? I started running about this past August and just getting back into it, focusing on waking up early and getting a workout, and it's changed everything.
And is there a particular nugget you share that really seems to connect and resonate with those that you're teaching?
Yeah, I think so with them, more with the team and stuff. I love this. I don't know if you know Gary Vaynerchuk. He says, I won't say it in the way he says it, but if you live for the weekends, your stuff is broken. That's massive for me because I just think we live in such a world where there's so many opportunities to do so many different things that if you're doing something you hate, like it's just not worth it. You got to get out, find something that you love. And that's and I say the same thing to teachers all the time. I said, if you're dreading Monday, like you should probably not be a teacher anymore. Like, mm-hmm. And I love when I talk to teachers and they're like, I am so pumped to be back from spring break because I get to see my kids again. I get to make an impact. And I'm like that too. Like I'm pumped for Mondays every Monday, like even when it's stressful and it's crazy. Like we're a small business, we're growing, like it's stressful pretty much every day, but I love it. And I just think if you're just dying on Monday already for it to be Friday night, man, like something's broken. You got to fix it.
And Jeff, if folks want to learn more or get in touch, where'd you point them?
Twitter. I love Twitter. I'm on there all the time. I'm at Jeff Gargis. I'm on Instagram too, @_JeffGargis, or just reach out to us at teachbetter.com. And you can literally email me at Jeff@teachbetter.com. I love building connections and chat with people and just figuring out if there's any way that I can help.
And do you have a final challenge or call to action for folks seeking to be awesome at their jobs?
I think take some time to get really, really self-aware. Get rid of all the nonsense and like the BS and what other people say. Take time to figure out what you love or what you don't love, what you're good at and what you struggle with. Really think about it. Clear out all that other junk, everybody else's voices. Forget like the expectations that people have for you, the criticism, the negativity, all that stuff. Like just focus on like the real you. Be you. When you do that, you have no reason to like make it up and trying to put on a show. It's just for you. Like, what are you awesome at? What do I love doing? Go do that. Figure out, how do I play on my strengths? How do I surround myself with people who are awesome at what I'm not, so that I can be awesome at what I need to be? And just like what that means, going to work for someone, joining a team, building a team to fill your gaps, whatever it is. Like, no one can be as awesome at the things you do as you are. So go find out what that is, do it, and just love your life. It's not worth not doing that.
Awesome. Well, Jeff, this has been a treat. Good luck in all you're doing and helping folks teach better.
I appreciate it, Pete. This has been awesome. Thank you.
I really liked the point that he came back to again and again. Jeff talked about actually caring. I'm going to hear that in my mind numerous times. Actually caring. My, no G. That sticks. The Jeff flavor. Actually caring. Because it really does make all the difference. Because I've seen a number of, I don't know, systems, approaches, prescriptive advice for businesses and processes like, oh, ask your people these three questions at the beginning or the end of a meeting or the beginning or the end of the work week in an email. And I get what they're going after is questions like, hey, what was your high or what was your low or what's a challenge that I can help you with? You know, whatever. Those sorts of things are handy questions that sort of point to being able to serve and care. But if you don't actually care, they ring hollow. And I've seen that fall through in a number of times when that's sort of the fancy intervention the speaker or the consultant offers is just ask these three questions. Well, the three key questions are not a substitute for actually caring, as Jeff would say. And indeed, they're just a handy means of maybe systematizing or repeating or making more habitual your caring if you have forgotten to do so. So great distinction from Jeff, the stuff that actually makes the difference. Again, the show notes, the transcript, the links to items we've referenced over at awesomeatyourjob.com/F430. And if you haven't already, I hope you'll push subscribe. You'll catch our next guest. It's Sarah Cannaday. She is talking about some particular business rules that need to be broken. Hope to catch you there. Peace.
Thanks for listening. To get the most out of the show, we recommend two key things. First, check out the extra resources at awesomeatyourjob.com. You can find this episode's transcript and links, as well as the perfect episode for your situation. You can search the full text transcripts of hundreds of episodes or explore episodes tagged by topic and competency covered. Second, subscribe to the podcast and get future episodes automatically. You can subscribe by telling Siri and several other smartphones and speakers, subscribe to the How to Be Awesome at Your Job podcast or by tapping subscribe in your podcast player of choice. If you'd like some extra help figuring out podcasts and how subscriptions work, visit awesomeatyourjob.com/subscribe for guidance. Hope to catch you on the next episode of How to Be Awesome at Your Job.